awesomeness, pure awesomeness. That's what the National Hockey Night theme is to me, for sure. As if you've listened to the show before, you definitely know that. That's not a new one, but you know it's going to be a good one if I play that theme, because we're squarely in the 90s, folks, and that's just a fun era of hockey. I don't care where you are or where you're from. That's a fun one. And, well, okay, maybe because I grew up in the 90s, it's awesome. But once again, this is my show. And if you forgot, my show, I'm Danny Lambert, and this is From the Point, and this is the podcast where we talk about great hockey books, dissect them, talk about what makes them tick, and just some of the major themes that are in them, just have good discussions centered around hockey books. As usual, before I dive into the book, it's always customary to talk about what's going on in the world of hockey, mostly in the NHL. And right now, I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not here to talk about Tom Wilson. I mean, that story's been overdone. So, and I know there's plenty of counterpoints and points out there. So I'll leave that to another time. But what I did think was crazy was the, and they say it's not because of that incident, but just the whole thing that happened afterwards with the Rangers criticizing George Parros, getting fined, and then all of a sudden the president and the GM get fired, which they say is not related, but as they say in many circles, I'll buy that for a dollar. just funny to think that they dropped him so quickly, and say what you will about the Rangers, but that's a team on the rise for sure. They've done a lot of good positioning. So you think that John Davidson and the GM would have gotten rewarded for that, but they didn't. They got fired, and now they're bringing in Chris Drury, which is a great move. The guy has been coveted by lots of other teams, and he's been an outstanding assistant GM and someone you can definitely point to as being a good, you know, reason why that club is where it is right now and poised to do great things. But he just felt it to be abrupt, and to hear that it wasn't because of the situation that happened recently is, boy, I don't know. I mean, that's hard to swallow. But really, in the end, I still see good things on the horizons for the Rangers. So if you're a Rangers fan out there and you're listening, hey, fret not. This is just a bump in the road, so to speak. Next year's going to be good. Good things are going to happen. But still, when I look at the playoff picture, my views as more teams have clinched over this last week really haven't changed as to who I think sitting in the strongest position out for the playoffs. And that's the Western Conference teams, Western Division teams. For my money, it's still Vegas, Colorado, and Minnesota. And if you're paying attention, I actually said that wrong. It's now Vegas, Minnesota, and Colorado, because Minnesota has taken over the second spot, at least what might be temporarily, from the Avalanche. So I just think that those two teams are great. Their doormats are not the bigger doormats as some other divisions have. LA and Anaheim are tough competitors, even though Anaheim's going through a serious rebuild. And then the Coyotes, they were up there for a while and competing, even though they were left out. And I'd also point to the Blues. If the Blues are number four in your division and still playing like they are, I don't know. I look at the other divisions and I see that the doormats in those divisions, so to speak, the bottom dwellers, aren't as strong as the bottom dwellers in the West. And I think that's something you need to pay attention to when you really look at it. Because what's your upside when everybody comes together? Sure, divisional play is going to get you far in the playoffs if you dominate. But, you know, really in the end, you got to look at something there a little bit more than that. But that's really what I think. But once again, prove me wrong. But looking at this week and getting into the show, I really wanted to bring it back to something that's strong for all those playoff contenders, and that's goaltending, because that's what the subject of our book this week is all about, because it's a memoir written by a goaltender, but more importantly, it's written by a great backup goaltender, because as we all know, goaltending just isn't a single person usually for a team. It's a tandem. Having a good starter and a good backup are very important things. It's just really worth its weight in gold to have a backup who's every bit as good and able to jump in when that starter gets injured or just needs a night off. But I just really can't say enough, and for those of you who follow hockey, there's also that intangible sometimes that a really good backup gives, especially when you've got one with great personality like the subject and author of our book this week. Because it just adds another aspect to the locker room, another kind of fun voice. I mean, if you ride the bench that long, you're sitting on the end, You're the guy who's opening the door after shifts and before shifts. You're encouraging everybody as they're getting on and off the ice. It's an important job, and it takes a good personality to do it really well. And, of course, one of the greatest examples I can think of, like I said, is the author and subject of this week's book, and that's Jamie McLennan. Noodles, as he was well known to everybody in the hockey world, just had so many exploits over a strong 11-year NHL season that you just can't say enough. And thank goodness for us, his ability to tell good stories and to be positive and just sort of have that upbeat. If you've ever watched Noodles on TSN, you know what I'm talking about. He's amazing. And we're lucky he wrote a book about it. And it's some of the best collection of hockey stories ever. And what made me really want to read it, too, was that it was pointed out in another book, Hockey Card Stories last week. Ken Reed definitely points out that it's one of the better books to go out there and read. And if you read it, you'll find it out. So with that, we're going to get into this week's episode, talk about some awesome hockey stories that are through the lens of Jamie McLennan as we go over his memoir book, The Best Seat in the House. That's coming up right after this. Let's go over the warm-up.
Is it the most thankless job in the NHL? Some think it is. I don't. Being a backup goalie, and Jamie McLennan kind of made a career out of it. He's written a book about playing second fiddle to some of the game's best, Fuhr, Hextall, Luongo, Kiprusoff. It's called The Best Seat in the House. My life as a backup goalie in the NHL. Great goalie in his own right, you know. Sometimes things work out where you are the backup for a lot of this. And I was talking to you in the middle, during the break, about really what you talk about, where you're coming from in this book. That you were there for a lot of big events that happened, playing with some of the game's greats, but often in the background.
Yeah, I called myself the Forrest Gump of the NHL because really I was that guy in the background. But it was neat to see. I mean, you get to play with guys like Ron Hextall and Grant Fuhr. I mean, legendary.
Yeah.
I mean, former Oiler when it comes down to it. But you know, to get to meet them and take you know see the human side of them, not just the aura around them.
Well, what's Hextall like? Because when when all of us watched Hextall, right? He was a classic Hextall because there was another Hextall who fought, who played years before him. I think it was Brian.
Yeah.
Quite the temper on that guy. What was he like off the ice?
Exact opposite.
Oh, really?
What's amazing about Ron is the minute that he steps into the rink, that's where the crazy Ron Hextall comes out as far as just in the intensity. But away from the rink, family guy, great sense of humor, very laid back. And that's what I would like people to know about Ron Hextall.
You have some funny stories in this book. You mentioned a hot dog. What's the inside scoop on the hot dog for you?
When you're a player and you play in Montreal, it's known. I mean, obviously the Forum and the Bell Center are known for their hot dogs. And players, obviously, when you play against the Montreal Canadiens, it's the storied franchise. But a lot of guys know those hot dogs and they eat them. They're the toasted bun. They taste great. Well, what I did was I hid one in my glove during the game, and I would put the glove to my face and eat it, but I got busted by the coach. So he called me out in between periods.
Which coach busted you?
Joel Quenneville.
So Noodle says it right there pretty much, and it almost makes me think, why should I have to record an entire almost hour-long podcast about this? But the purpose of the book, and as the title suggests, The Best Seat in the House, Jamie was witness to tons of great things over his NHL career, even though he may have not have been the key to the win or to the team because he was the backup, although I'd argue in many cases he actually was, because he did take over that role, starter role, when he needed to and did it pretty well in almost every occasion, every situation he was in. But that's what's really cool about the book, and that's why I think it'll endear it to you, because Jamie comes at it from that perspective of, hey, look, I was there for some really cool things, and I want to tell you about them. I may not have been the man, but I was pretty close, and I got some cool things to tell you about it. So, but looking into this warm-up, I guess the place that I want to start is from my own personal experience. In the 1990s, I watched this guy a ton. I mean, Noodles was awesome. I remember him mostly when he was in St. Louis and Minnesota. Those just happened to be two of my favorites, so it was easy to notice them. But in those days, it was almost like, you know, you had Jamie McLennan, and he's in the background, and you just knew that, hey, look, at any time, he could take over, and things are going to be fine. And he did, in a lot of cases. whether it was for Grant Fuhr, then for Roman Turek, and then when he got into Minnesota, same thing. And then later on with Calgary, he was backing up Mika Kiprusoff, who's awesome in his own rights, but you got to think that would Kiprusoff have been the same person had he have not known that McLennan was there? Would the Flames of that era been as good as they were if it wasn't because of McLennan? You don't know. And I mean, that's just really kind of, you know, where you see the stories in the book developing. He was there for a lot of the cool stories of the 90s and 2000s. The big ones, and we're going to talk more about these later on, is, you know, talking about playing behind Ron Hextall. Now, Ron Hextall had a small stint with the New York Islanders. Most of you remember him as Philadelphia Flyer. But he was with the Islanders for a while, and guess who his backup was? It was a young rookie, Jamie McLennan. And McLennan says that he learned a lot from Hextall, and we've got a really good story about that later on. Talking about being with the Blues, I mean, he played with Hull and Shanahan. Those were an awesome set of Blues teams there in the 90s. Sure, they didn't get all the way to the promised land, but they were an exciting team, very big personality type team, and he talks a lot about those too. And then, of course, making it to the Cup Finals with Calgary in 03-04 is pretty special, and he talks about that, of course. And, you know, one thing that's interesting is to think that McLennan's from Edmonton, and he took Calgary, or helped Calgary get to their latest Stanley Cup final. Kind of funny to think of when you really peel it back. But, you know, the book is a lot about balance, in my opinion. So for every on-ice story, there's a great off-ice story. For every downer, there's an upper. Mostly uppers, because, I mean, let's look at it. McLennan's a positive guy, and it definitely shines through in the book. And that's why, you know, I really loved all these small little stories that he had to tell, because it was about times that you remember, people that you remember, places that you might remember as well. So it just draws you back, makes you think about it for a minute, and you get it through the lens of, like we said, somebody who had the best seat in the house for the entire thing. So not too bad when you look at it, and that's what really endears you to this book. It's written really well. It's a very short book. It's not anything too long. And like I said, just chopped up into great little snippets of stories, small bites, always easy to digest. And we've talked about that before. Can't say enough about how much those are kind of my favorite books when it comes to reading a hockey book. But for the discussion today, I think it's best just to kind of frame it in a couple ways. And I really, sometimes I preview the three periods and sometimes I don't, but this is a week where we're going to kind of talk about what the three periods have a hold of us today. In the first period, I just want to talk all about what the on-ice stories were and just where that takes the book and McLennan's life. And then second period, let's talk about some off-ice stories. And then third period, though, I really want to talk about, you know, just why Noodles was such a great guy to get some perspective from. Why is this book just different than any other? I mean, because there's certainly a lot of hockey stories out there. Why is this one any better than the rest of them? Because I feel it's a superior book in some ways. So, and we'll talk about that and why I think that is. But for now, I guess there's nothing more else to do than to just get to the first period, and there's just some awesome on-ice stories covered in Best Seats in the House, coming up right after this.
Joined by my pal Jamie McLennan, who started his NHL career with the Islanders, backing up fiery goaltender Ron Hextall. What is your best Hexy story?
Oh, I'll never forget. We were playing in St. Louis. So, you know, this is back in the 90s where buffet-style pregame lunches, they weren't on the menu. You would basically get a served meal at lunch. I was lucky enough to sit at the veterans' table with Hexy. Hexy kind of took care of me. So it was like Ray Ferraro and Stumpy Thomas, Steve Thomas, and Pat Flatley, some of the big names on the team. And there's me riding shotgun with Hexy. And Hexy was so proud of this brand new suit that he got. And I don't know how much he spent, but back in the day, I'm sure it was like a $1,000 suit, which would translate to like a $5,000 suit nowadays. And the waiter was walking around with half chickens. And as he leaned over to give like Pat Flatley his, one fell off of a plate right onto Hexy's lap. And the grease and everything went flying all over Hexy. And the room just went silent because they're like, that is the wrong door to choose. Ron Hextall on a game day, and you drop a half chicken on his brand new suit. And all I remember is him leaning over and said, you better be ready tonight because I'm going to kill somebody. In the old St. Louis Arena, I wasn't on the bench. The bench wasn't big enough for the backup to sit on there. So I'm all the way at the other end, behind Cujo, of all people. We're early in the game, and I'll never forget, we're down 3-0. And the third goal, Hexy goes a little berserk and starts chasing after Peter Nedved. So I can see the bench, and Al Arbor, our legendary coach, is waving at me. And I skate out, and Cujo, as I skate by, he goes, good luck, kid. And I skate the whole length, and the refs, there's like three refs like wrestling Hexy, and they're like taking him off the ice like he's a caged animal. But we ended up coming back and tying that game 5-5. But I'll never forget, it all started with the chicken being dropped on Hexy's brand new suit.
So did Hexy come to the game with a big stain on the suit, grease down the front?
I have no idea. Now looking back, I wouldn't surprise me if he was wearing like a t-shirt and a pair of like sweatpants or something, because I think the suit was like a write-off, if not the pants were, because he dropped the waiter dropped the chicken right into his lap and it sprayed up. So I just remember the room going silent, and you know, Ray and guys like that who couldn't wait to give it to Hexy, not even they made comments because they knew the seriousness of the situation.
I wonder if the waiter was a hockey fan and he had any idea that he had chosen the worst possible guy.
I don't know, but if it was a targeted approach, it worked that day and got Hexy off his game.
Great stuff, Noodles. Thanks for this.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so that one's pretty good. I love that story. And it's in the book, word for word. You can read it when you read the book. If you need the Cliff Notes, just go ahead and find that clip on YouTube. It's also got a cool, funny animation that goes with it. But one of the things, and I think, and you heard it earlier in the show too, is it cannot be understated, is wow, Hextall did all that crazy stuff on the ice. McLennan looks up to him a lot for a lot of the things he learned off the ice from him, and says that the dude was just 360 out, way different than he is on the ice. He's just a super nice guy. Whereas if you remember, like I do, from watching him in the 90s, I wouldn't mess with Ron Hextall. I mean, most times you don't say that about a goalie, but I would say that about him for sure. So definitely a funny story. I mean, shoot, guy scores on you chase him around. That's awesome. And I think it's really funny how, you know, once again, and this could be a theme when if you read the book and what we're going to talk about today, McLennan's such a great storyteller that he throws in that extra that, you know, hey, yeah, Curtis Joseph sat there and went, yeah, have a great game, kid. That's pretty awesome. So look at the first period. Like I said, I just want to go over some of the on-ice stories that were covered in the book. Of course, we can't cover them all, but I just want to highlight a few of them as we discuss the book and just, you know, talk to them about why those are so cool, why they're so special. Because as we talked about, and really what the book is, you know, the premise of the book is that, you know, McLennan was a witness to so many cool things, be it on or off the ice. And like I said, the first period, we're going to talk about some of those cool things he witnessed on the ice. And that was the first one, is Ron Hextall chasing around Peter Nedved after scoring on him. Now, I just think it can't be understated, and I know you just heard the story, but I just loved how Noodles takes that story from cradle to grave and does it pretty quickly. And he does it in the book. And that's why it's really cool. And adds in the things like, you know, Al Arbor telling him, hey, get ready, kid, right away, knowing that this is going to be bad. And I think what I also just loved about that story is it was a fait accompli. I mean, Hextall said he was going to get somebody that night, and oh boy, did he ever. And it ended up being a good moment, apparently, for McLennan, because, as he says, they actually skated up to a 5-5 tie, which is not an easy thing to do once you're down 3-0. And if you're like me and you've seen games in the old St. Louis Arena, that's a tough place to play if you're a visiting team. I mean, I'm not saying that you can't come back in the barn like that, but it was pretty darn tough. So kudos to him. And it's just another one of those great stories. I mean, shoot, do you ever hear anybody talk about Ron Hextall and then being, you know, how to put it, directly affected by some of the violence like that? But as we saw, pretty cool story. Another one that I really like from the book, and I just brought me back to an era, was when McLennan was playing for St. Louis. He talks about a year where it was the last game of the season, and this is another reason why his stories are so great. It brings you back to an era, and he does a good job of explaining the context of that era to you too, if you're not familiar with it. And in this regard, he talks about how before the salary cap became a thing, player bonuses were huge. They're probably one of the biggest drivers of contracts, if you didn't know that. So performances, getting a bonus for different performances was pretty standard and really one of the biggest things that was baked into many players' contracts. So it was all about getting to certain milestones and different marks. That being said, at the end of the year, Scott Young of the Blues had a performance contract. If he got to a certain point, I think it was 20 or 30 goals. I'm trying to remember which one. I'm horrible. I get it. But the problem is he's in the last game of the season against L.A., and he's talking about it. And Pavel Dimitra is in the same boat. He's got to get to a certain amount of points. So Quenneville, being a great player's coach that he is, actually decides he's going to play him on the last shift when they pull the goaltender as the Kings try to even the score up, being down by one. Typical strategy. We all know that. So Young and Dimitra on the ice are trying to get their goal, get their points, get their goal respectively. So Dimitra actually passes to Young. He's got a wide open net to get it. And Yaroslav Modrý, as McLennan describes it, makes a Stanley Cup winning dive across the way to stop the empty net goal and cost Young literally thousands of dollars. And the same thing for Dimitra. So it almost ended up being a $1 million shot block, is what he said. It was just too crazy because of the two performance bonuses that were put together there that were lost out. But what was really neat, though, is, and once again, just hearing from Noodles and taking that perspective of, hey, yeah, he wasn't on the ice, but he was there, and it's a cool story, and it's something that happened to him and his teammates. He talks about that, you know, Scott Young actually ended up getting about half that bonus, really, in the end, and that was because of showing so much heart, so much determination, and then probably a little bit of, you know, nudge by Joel Quenneville there as well. And then one of the other really good stories, it's sort of off ice, but really on ice when you look at it, because when you're career backup goaltender, you spend a lot of, as the book says, you spend a lot of time in the best seat in the house at the end of the bench. Or in this case, if you're in the old if you're in Montreal, you're across the way by the Zamboni. And so we've heard about it before. We heard about it last week. French Canadians apparently make awesome hot dogs, and they did so in Quebec City, and the hot dogs in Montreal are amazing apparently. So McLennan said it was always awesome to try to sneak one of those in while he was backing up. And so what he did is he put one in his glove and was across the way, and he wasn't really being looked at close enough, but it just looked like if he ate it out of his glove, he was just sort of scratching his nose with his glove or something. And he said it looked like he was getting away with it till he got to the end of the first period, and he got in the locker room, and Quenneville asked him, he said, well, so you enjoy that hot dog? And he said he tried to play it off, and eventually just sort of said, well, just enjoy a couple more. There's a bunch on the table, so not too bad. Cool story. I didn't do it very good justice, and I'm probably not doing a whole lot of these stories justice. But once again, just a neat story, stuff that you didn't think of. Hey, did you know that the hot dogs in Montreal were great? All the Canadians are probably rolling their eyes at me, but Americans, did you know that? And then, of course, you know, one of the biggest and most powerful things in his career, and I think on ice as well, was just how he ended it, his NHL career, that is, and by slashing Johan Franzen like he did in the playoffs. If you ever watch that clip, which is we're going to play it here, I think next or maybe before the third period, I'll have to remember where I put it. But that being said, if you ever look at it, yeah, McLennan puts two hands into him and really gets him. But that has a lot to do with the frustrations of the game up to that point. He had been really getting at Mika. at that point, and then they replaced him and put Noodles in, and Noodles just went after him. He's got a lot of regret about that. Says he probably shouldn't have done it. But what's funny is he got suspended for 2 games for that, and he didn't end up playing in the NHL again, so he's still technically suspended. And that's another one of those genius things about this entire book, is because Noodles just sits there and will explain to you, hey, look, you know, I'm still technically suspended from the NHL, which, you know. So like I said, though, I mean, I want to end this period and just kind of say that there are many more on-ice stories from the book, but those are just kind of the highlights. And what I really wanted to highlight to you and just kind of explain through those stories is, hey, McLennan's got some really cool stories to tell you. And I think we're going to talk about it more in the third period, so I don't want to steal the thunder, but it's just how he tells them to. It's really cool. So, but here in the second period, I want to go over a few more great stories, but these are more of the off-ice versions. So stand by. Second period's coming up right after this.
This is rare footage obtained by TSN. Jamie McLennan playing goal for the Florida Panthers. You see, when you back up a superstar like Roberto Luongo, ice time is rare.
I just do my best to support Roberto in every way possible.
Living here in Miami, playing one or two games a month, you might think that's a pretty good gig. Well, think again, for Jamie McLennan is much more than a backup.
Come on, boys, let's compete here. Get it on.
He's a motivator.
Hit him!
An agitator.
Fathead.
A commentator.
Here we go, couple. Big target on this guy. Money.
And most important of all, he'll do anything to help Roberto Luongo. Anything.
It's great having Jamie around, you know. He helps me with all the little things that I don't really have time for anymore.
It's all right?
A little tighter, please.
I don't know what Roberto would do without Jamie. He's really invaluable.
Yeah, and eggs too. I forgot eggs.
Oh, yeah. Forgot eggs.
Come on, 5 minutes. 5 more minutes. I'm trying.
That's good.
Do you think Jamie McLennan gets enough recognition for what he does?
Who?
Do you ever get jealous that Roberto gets all the playing time, all the attention, and you're basically forgotten?
Never.
Wow. Jamie sure is a great guy.
Yes. I can't believe he bought that sucker. Luongo this, Luongo that. Sick of it. If only...
Did you just do an evil laugh?
Oh, crap. He's on to me.
That was the last we saw of Jamie McLennan. But we'll never forget what he taught us that day, about how a good backup does whatever it takes to support his starter, all the while dreaming of maybe someday, somehow, getting his chance to shine.
Okay, so if you hadn't seen that clip before, you gotta get on YouTube right now and see. It's really cool. He mentions it in the book, too. It was a segment he did for TSN where he... when he was in Florida talking about his relationship with Roberto Luongo. But it's kind of a parody, obviously, in what you don't see there, what doesn't give the clip justice audio-wise, is that he runs him over with a Zamboni, which is pretty cool. Now, granted, it's a dummy. It looked like Luongo, but they set it up really well, so not too bad. I really, really enjoyed watching that, and it just shows you, hey, this guy's got a real good sense of humor. And I think that's more of what the off-ice stories are going to show you. Yeah, the on-ice stuff had some funny stuff to it for sure. That was more of the, you know, lay witness stuff. But I think the off-ice antics, for the most part, when you look at Noodles McLennan, is really just about his sense of humor and who he is, just the lighthearted, fun, just special personality that he's got. And that's awesome. And positive personality, too, on top of that. So I guess I would start off by saying McLennan does a great job to tell you about his life mixed in with the hockey stories, too, because it's not just about his life in hockey. This book is about Jamie McLennan's life. So there were two stories about him kind of leading the rock star lifestyle, which were really kind of funny. One was One was kind of more like, wow. And then more was just like, oh, man, that's cool. The first one was, I thought it was, if you remember from back in the day, McLennan always had Kiss on his helmet, whether it had been like on the side or usually on the back, because that was his favorite team. And then eventually he stopped doing that. He explains to you in the book why he stopped putting Kiss on his mask, and that was because he actually met Gene Simmons and didn't really like what he had to see. He said it was kind of creepy. He met Simmons when he was playing in Florida, went to go to an IndyCar race, and Simmons just happened to be there. They arranged for him to meet him. And he said he went there with his girlfriend. He said, first off, Gene Simmons was just eating his face off on an egg salad sandwich and chewing with his mouth open when he met him. And he said first, it doesn't even shake his hand, doesn't really acknowledge him, just sort of looks at his girlfriend and twirls her around and, you know, eyes her up and down and kind of Googles her. Surprises Gene Simmons. I mean, I don't know. But the second part was that to shake and shake Jamie's hand and sort of acknowledge him, he wipes his egg salad off his face and puts it straight up into Jamie's hand. Jamie didn't really think that was such a great experience, and after that kind of said he didn't really need to put Kiss on his mask anymore, per se. And then the other rock star thing I thought was funny. So he describes that he became good friends with Chad Kroeger of Nickelback, which is cool as far as what you think of Nickelback or whatnot. But at the same time, I mean, shoot, if you're from Canada, there's no bigger rock stars there, especially in the 90s and early 2000s. But he describes it. He went and partied with him one time in Vancouver during preseason, and he had to make it back to the hotel in Vancouver by 11 to make the bus. So he was in Chad's house, which is actually suburban Vancouver, and overslept, had about an hour to go, knew he was going to be able to make it back via limo. So he woke Kroeger up, and Kroeger said, oh, that's cool, you can just take a helicopter. He took a helicopter, and he got there and back to downtown in time, got on the bus, no big deal. Or the team bus, no big deal. Yeah, kind of funny, in my opinion. He tells it even better, and that's just one of those other things. Some of the other good ones I liked a lot. He talks about having a night off in Montreal and saying how fun that was usually. And he said when he was part of the Blues, they kind of hijacked a cab one time. He got in the cab and basically paid the cab driver if he could drive, and as the cab driver was getting around, he started inching the car away, kind of pulling a prank on him. And then once the cab driver actually got in, he drove to the destination. The cab driver gave him the directions and stuff, so it was really funny. So one of those things he said, it just was of the era, and I think that's why, another reason this book was so good, he describes things of an era that you couldn't get away with that today. That cabbie went to the press, holy smokes, but not too bad, really. Other good things, when he started working for TSN, talks about clogging a toilet right before he was going to go on a segment, and then thanking goodness that he could actually get the toilet to go flush before he got out of there, and Bob McKenzie went to go use the toilet after him. I mean, that's kind of funny. But I think one of the funniest stories is, so, and what I didn't really realize till I read the book, and I usually fancy myself someone who keeps up with all these guys, especially from the 90s, but at the end of McLennan's career, since he was kind of suspended from the NHL, all that other stuff, and he said he wanted to experience the game from the European perspective, because the Europeans come over here and play, have such a good time, he thought it would have been interesting to go over there and do that. So he signed on to go play in the KHL. And he said he didn't last too long there. He only lasted about 2 months. And he talks about his first experience of actually getting into Russia, and they're in a bus trying to leave the Moscow airport. And this is some guy starts blocking the team bus. They can't back out. There's a big cussing match in Russian between the driver. So the driver of the Toyota Corolla and that was blocking the bus and the bus driver. He says the guy in the Corolla goes ahead and takes his gun out and threatens the bus driver. Noodles was like freaked out. He didn't understand. So eventually things got cleared up. Things diffused. The bus is on its way. And he's, holy crap. He talks to one of the guys who knows English, the team captain, and says, well, what's going on, man? That guy had a gun. He's like, whatever, I'm not scared. He's kind of like blew it off. He's like, it's just Russia. which made me laugh, especially out there, not to go too far off topic, but if, you know, I'll harken back to like Burt Kreischer and, you know, his machine monologue. If you've ever heard, that's great. Pretty much along those lines. This is Russia. So not bad. But just another great story of how Noodles McLennan shows you his life through a lens of hockey and some of the crazy things that he went through. Because it's not all glamorous. And I think we're going to talk a little bit more of that in the next period. But, you know, we talk about all these great players and all the great things they did. Sometimes the road to hockey stardom doesn't always mean that you're going to be traveling five-star jets, all that good stuff. So not too bad. And sometimes you might have to end your career in the KHL. And I'll also say that his stories about the coaches and stuff in the KHL, absolute gold. Nobody could tell it better. Okay, so I think that's it for the second period and all I want to talk about. So we're going to go into the third period, sort of wrap things up. What I want to do with this next period is just put a perspective on why it was so good to hear these stories and why the book is so good from that perspective. Because there's a little bit more of the nuances of why the book was good than just the stories themselves. And we're going to discuss that in the third period right after this.
35-year-old Jamie McLennan, native of Edmonton, an Islander draft choice 16 years ago.
And I don't know how you feel about that, but McLennan going in, I think that's real smart.
Same page here. At this point in the game, it'd be nice to play running time and not to get anybody hurt for either team. All game long, we've had cameras ISO'd on Jerome McGinley and Henrik Zetterberg. Following today's game, you can go to NBCSports.com and listen to Bill, Ray, and Brett analyze some of their shifts. Check out Starships at NBCSports.com.
McLennan's going to get a penalty here, slashing Johan Franzen. Not very smart by Jamie McLennan.
Again, obviously, the frustration was, oh, my God!
Oh, what is he doing?
Oh, my God!
Well, that was just an
oh,
aim.
No,
what is he doing?
That's imbecilic.
They throw him right out. That's good.
Oh,
Kiprasov will be back in.
Yeah. And they don't have a backup goalie. They're going to have to get a back. He's going to get suspended for that. That's insane. That's crazy.
Well, even though it seemed like a good choice at the time, it was a terrible move.
Yeah, no, that's terrible.
That's so out of character for him. That is bizarre.
Unacceptable, Pierre. Doesn't matter if it's out of character. Unacceptable.
Oh, I agree. This is reprehensible. This is terrible.
Well, he was going to get an original call for slashing Franzen. Then he comes up and hits Franzen right in the midsection. And Marc Jonet comes right in. But he hacked Johan Franzen twice. The second time the call came from Jonet. Lennon coming in for Mika Kiprasov. There's one. Another one. There's two. There's the penalty. No problem. McClellan fell on his own. Jamie McClellan.
That's senseless.
Two for slash, five for slash, and a game misconduct.
As promised, I played the Johan Franzen slashing incident for you. I know I kind of said it was the second period or third period. Can remember? Now you know. I played it before the third period. So, but a reason I wanted to play that because it is something that's so pivotal in Noodles' career, and especially how that was the last time he ever saw the ice in the NHL. Kind of interesting when you really think about it. And it's something that he explains in depth in the book, and I recommend that you read it. But he does have a lot of remorse over that incident. And he said, like Pierre McGuire keeps saying, yes, it is out of character for him to do that. But he said, you know, he's just a human being. He let his frustrations boil a little bit over. But then again, he also kind of alludes to Franzen may have had it coming to him. Whole nother story. But that being said, so in the third period, what we're going to talk about is just how great these stories are and really what it means. So when you look at the book and, you know, what makes Noodles in this book so special, it's the stories. I mean, come on. How much inside access do you get inside this book? And the answer is a ton. I mean, when you look at books from different perspectives, or usually from the third, you know, from the first person, and they only really talk about their own role inside of things. But what I really liked about this is Noodles talks about his role, but he also talks about the people around him and just what they meant to him and how things went together and just some of the very good things that were there. And not many times, if at all, and, you know, I'll even say that more absolute, this book is not really negative at all. I didn't really see any negative parts of this book. Jamie's a very positive person, and it comes through in all of his stories, and that was a lot of fun to read for sure, definitely. And it just, you know, he protects the people who need to be protected because maybe they did a little something stupid or don't need to be involved. And then, of course, he mentions the people who need to be mentioned. And I get the feeling like that's one of those things that when he wrote this book, he also did the solid of going, hey, look, is it okay if I mention you, if we talk about this, that, or the other? Because if you've got good stories like he coughs up in the book, I'm pretty sure there's even better ones he's just not telling us. So, and that would be interested to tell. I would be interested to actually sit Noodles down and ask him that myself. So, but you know, he's just very upbeat during the entire book, and that's another great thing. You know, it's as we talked about kind of a little bit in the beginning of the book, it just shows you how great of a teammate the guy was. And I remember hearing about that back in the day, just how great of a teammate, how much of a supporter, and just somebody that, you know, you wanted on your team, because a lot of people talk very highly of the guy, for sure. And it comes through in the stories. I mean, most people who are kind of lame or outcast don't really have good stories to tell, because they're not on the inside, they're not trusted. But you get the feeling wherever Noodles went, he was definitely part of the team, definitely somebody that everybody wanted to have fun with, for sure. And, you know, once again, it's just somebody's stories you want to hear, for sure. And then I think moreover, what for me is just the connection to him and the connection to the stories is just a connection to the game. You know, you don't get to be a Hall of Famer and always have a good story to tell. Some of the Hall of Famers don't really have a great story to tell. They're just like, well, I was good, I played good, and so I was successful. With McLennan, you really have more of a story of like, hey, I tried to play good, I had a lot of fun doing it, and I just want to kind of tell you some of the cool stuff that happened to me and the people around me and the things that I was laid witness to. And that's the thing. I mean, it goes... To me, the story is more about the person sometimes, not necessarily the event. And while some of these events are really cool in the book, I think they're also just made that much cooler, or even in some cases, they are cool because it happened to Jamie McLennan, and he tells you about it in the book. So that was a lot of fun. And to me, that's just amazing. And then, I mean, I can't say this enough. I see this a lot when I read books about this era. Is I grew up in this era. It's awesome to be connected to some of the stories and some of the faces that are behind it. Like I said before, fancy myself kind of a big Blues of the 90s fan. I went to college in St. Louis, too, on top of that little personal note. So I was living it. And just to hear the story he tells about Brett Hull getting into it with Mike Keenan, I'm like, yeah, always knew that was going on. Really cool to hear a good story about it, because... As you know, those two couldn't have been more different. And in my opinion, Keenan ran Hull out of St. Louis, which is a tragedy in and of itself, and something we can definitely talk about at a later date. But really, in the end, what I'd say is what makes the stories, what makes Noodles' stories in this book special, are that it comes from a place of just genuine positivity, genuine love for the game, and just wanted to tell an excellent story to you. And I can't say enough. I mean, some guys want to hang back. Some guys want to make their story seem the way they want it to. You get the impression when Jamie McLennan tells you a story, you're not missing much as far as the details or what the actual intent is. So that's the genius of this book. That's the genius of the on and the off ice stories that he tells. So you'll enjoy it for sure if you actually do get around to reading it. But that's really where I want to take the post game, where I mostly, as you guys know, if you're a listener to the show, that's reserved more for the post game. So I'm going to stop that here, and then we're going to get into that and finish it up in the post game right after this.
I guess the last thought, Jamie, before we let you do your thing on the radio, is you played for so long, you had the experience of coaching, and now you've spent such a long time on the broadcasting side of it. How do you enjoy the broadcasting side of it? And I imagine it kind of helps keep connected and in some ways have some competitiveness.
Absolutely. I think, you know, the closest thing you can be to, I guess, being a part of the team and the team dynamic is broadcasting the games, because you feel like I'm in between the benches. You feel like you're a part of the game. You feel the atmosphere. You feel the intensity. You know, you're on the mute button sometimes because guys are yelling and screaming at each other. So you kind of, and what I like about it too, I don't know how you feel, but it's live. Like, not everything's going to be perfect. Like, you know, I'm not going to see everything perfectly. I'm going to misspeak sometimes, but it's, you know, it's live TV. It's live radio. That's the stuff I love, because I got to be on. I've got to spot what I need to see. I need to call what I think is the right call. Like, that's where the intensity comes for me. And you're right. If you end up getting to know the guys, and I know, you know, players on both teams, not that you're pulling for them, because I try and be non-biased, but I understand. I've been in that position. I've sat on that bench. I've felt the agony of defeat. I've been excited when a team has won. But in broadcasting, you know, as long as I am respectful on the air, as long as I don't say something wrong, I sleep well at night. And that was the difference, where when I was coaching and involved in an organization, you could have the greatest day of your life and show up at the rink and prepare your goalie or prepare your team to play well, and they lose 10-0 that night, and the pressure is on and the fans are upset and ownership's upset, and your day is completely ruined. Whereas in broadcasting, I put the headset down, I go have a beer, I go hang out. I'm like, win or lose, I'm fine with it, because, you know, I'm not too attached to that team. So I love broadcasting. I love talking live hockey. Some days in the media are tougher than others, just because there are, you know, hot button topics that you have to talk about, which, you know, sometimes aren't the greatest thing. But for the most part, I love what I do right now, and talking hockey and living it and talking to people in hockey. So, you know, it's been a good transition so far. We'll see how long it lasts, but this is year 10 for me. And you know, if I do it another 10 years, I think I'd be very happy and very comfortable.
I like that as a good way to sort of wrap things up, because that's how Jamie sees his life now as a broadcaster and as an analyst. But you can always tie it back to just and to what he felt like when he was actually sitting there, and as he would say, the best seat in the house as a backup goaltender, or even in the game as a goaltender, just the competitiveness and being part of the game and loving the game and wanting to talk about it and be a part of it. And I really like how he talked about enjoying what he does and hoping that he can do it for another 10 years, as he's been doing it for 10 years so far. I hope he can too, because he's definitely a good personality and one of those people we want to keep around in the hockey world. So as I look to wrap things up in the post game here, I just want to say, you know, first off, this book is really just sort of only, you know, only really the beginning. So I would recommend that you go out and you find more stories that Noodles has to tell, because they're out there and YouTube clips and elsewhere. And I'd imagine they'll be, if you're in the Toronto area, you can listen to them on the radio. He's probably got way more than what's just in the book. But at the same time, the book's worth reading because of that. Like I said, there's so, you know, I think we kind of went over a lot of the reasons to read the book in the third period. So it's funny, I'm looking at the post game, I'm like, wow, what do we got to talk about? But I do want to reiterate that, hey, look, this is one you want to read, because it's, you know, just about not just the game, but it's about the guy's life. And I think when you read about a life like this, that's one that's well-lived on both the athletic and the non-athletic side, it just, you know, makes you you want to smile and get some laughs. And I think that, you know, when you look back at your life, you want to know that it was for a purpose. And I think that's kind of a good purpose that Jamie's got there. He can take his playing life and his non-playing life, tell you some cool stories, and entertain you at the same time. And that's really what this book is about, just entertaining the reader. And once again, it's just kind of really cool that, and we've seen this so many times, and I alluded to it a little bit earlier, is it's not always the most successful people that have the best stories to tell. And I like to think that's more especially seen in hockey. I've enjoyed stories from some of the career minor leaguers that more so than I ever did from some of the Hall of Famers who just had everything handed to them. The perspective that these guys get, that they feel, and that they understand about the game is way better in some cases. So I would definitely call this book one of those. It's a story about a hockey guy who just wanted to play hockey had a lot of fun doing it, and is going to show you just how much fun he had doing it, and maybe, you know, draw you a little bit closer to the game, because you hear stories about him, about his life, and about some of the players and times that you remember in hockey. And you come out from the other end, you're watching the game, and you've just got that much more of a fresher perspective. You just kind of wonder what great stories are going on right now on that bench that we're not even thinking about because we're watching. But anyways, recommend it. Totally recommend it. If you're a fan of hockey stories, which you got to be if you read this book or listen to this podcast or read hockey books, you'll definitely enjoy this one. So go ahead and pick it up. Like I said, easy read, quick read, but one you'll remember for sure. And, well, as we say every week, I think I'm out of it. I think that's all I got. So really, many thanks as always for listening. I just can't say it enough. It's very humbling to know that you're out there and that you're taking some time to listen to what I have to say. But if you've got some more to say, especially about the show, I'd really appreciate it if you gave me some reviews on your favorite podcast place, wherever it might be. Really helps out. Helps distribute the show a little bit more, help me maybe reach a few more people out there. Also, take a subscribe if you don't already. If you like what you've heard, you'll be able to hear us all whenever we come up with a new episode for sure. Also, give a follow on social media, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. From the Point, look us up. Make it worth your while for sure, as I give facts and figures and interesting extra tidbits from the week's featured book throughout the week. It's kind of a fun little thing I like to do to connect, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it. Also, if you've got comments or if you have any questions or suggestions, go ahead and hit me up. I'm the show's email address. It's fromthepointpodcast16@gmail.com. And as we look ahead to next week, I really want to go over a special book to me in the hockey world, and one that's probably one of the best sports books ever written about any sport, really. And that is The Game by Ken Dryden. Like Dryden's books, it's a great book, and you'll really enjoy it as you get a good look into not only Ken Dryden's life, but those Canadiens of the 1970s. So looking forward to it, and I'll see you again next week. So till then, let's go ahead and stay classy, hockey fans. Take care.